You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down to earth.
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, July 12th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We got a very special edition of the show coming up today because right after our cannabis headline news, I'm moving the radical rant up to right after the news today because we've got a special with audio from Attorney General Jeff Sessions at the 30th DARE training conference in Dallas yesterday. You know, DARE, drug abuse resistance education from the 1980s, the old just say no attitude. Jeff Sessions wants to bring it back, and we'll play the audio and give you plenty of debunking in an extended radical rant today. Also on the program, we've got the Southwest Cannabis Chronicle, and we're going to be taking a look at the state of Nevada with CEO Braden Sutton. He will be here to talk about the shortage that they're having in marijuana in the Silver State, as well as the inability to replenish the store shelves, how that worked out. Plus, he wanted to promote his hemp-derived CBD oil that's 50-state friendly. I had a few things to say about that. Also, we'll have some drug war data mining where, once again, another study shows that marijuana reform in the states did not make kids take up smoking marijuana. All that, plus an hour or two, I debunk more CBD garbage from CEO Joel Stanley of Charlotte's Web. It's going to be a full show today.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Veterans of Compassion with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net. The complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Wednesday, July 12th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. WHDH News Boston reports that Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said lawmakers are close to reaching a deal on the state's marijuana bill. Six lawmakers at the State House have been meeting to discuss changes for weeks, and they are now 11 days past the deadline they imposed on themselves. Voters approved the legalization of recreational marijuana last November. Lawmakers are now negotiating amendments on issues like taxes and the regulation of marijuana shops. Baker said he hopes a deal is reached soon, saying, quote, "I'm told there are only a couple of minor things that are outstanding. I hope they get them done, because if they don't get them done, I think at some point we're going to have to go forward with the law as it was written," end quote. The House is looking at a 28% tax rate for recreational marijuana, while senators are looking at a rate that is closer to 12%. A regulatory vacuum has resulted from marijuana's Schedule I status, according to a new study conducted by Temple University, researchers reported in The Cannabist. While the resulting, quote, "patchwork of regulatory strategies," end quote, is hindering full understanding of the potential benefits and harms of cannabis for medical uses, it could provide a chance to redefine federal oversight of research efforts, according to the study. Quote, "If we're serious about marijuana as a therapy, as a drug, if we mean it's medicine, then we need to do research on it. We need to do trials," said Scott Burris, director of Temple's Center for Public Health Law Research. "Until the federal government drops it from Schedule I, we're going to be researching this with our scientific and regulatory hands tied behind our back," end quote. Disparate state medical marijuana laws should be considered a call to action for the federal government to weigh in on the topic beyond the Controlled Substances Act, he added. The Anchorage Assembly on Tuesday urged state marijuana regulators to pass laws allowing tourists and locals to smoke or consume marijuana in retail shops, saying it's a problem that people can buy commercial pot products but can't legally smoke it outside of private homes. Alaska Dispatch News reports that the resolution came ahead of the Alaska Marijuana Control Board's meeting in Fairbanks this week. The state regulatory board is expected to weigh several proposals related to marijuana consumption in retail stores. In February, the board abandoned a proposal that would have made Alaska the first state in the country to allow marijuana consumption in retail stores. The other three states where commercial shops have opened, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado, have not adopted statewide provisions for in-store use. Some international cities, notably Amsterdam, have allowed marijuana cafes for customers to buy and use pot. The Californian reports that a medical marijuana farmers market held several times since March 2016 and planned for this Sunday was canceled after the Humboldt County Planning Department sent a cease and desist letter. Planning and Building Director John Ford said that the event, known as the Casual Crop Exchange, held at Trim Scene Solutions in Redway, California, was violating the county's cannabis dispensary ordinance because it involved cannabis sales. Quote, "If you're selling cannabis right now, you fall under the dispensary ordinance," Ford said Friday afternoon. "The dispensary has to be within a building. It requires brick and mortar. It requires a permanent location. To do it without a permit is not legal," end quote. Ford said his department sent the cease and desist letter on June 13th after it received a complaint, though Ford said he did not have specific information on the complaint available at the time. A freshman wide receiver for the University of Nebraska's football team, Keyshawn Johnson Jr., has pleaded not guilty to possessing marijuana and drug paraphernalia. Court records reviewed by Associated Press say the written pleas were filed Tuesday in Lancaster County Court in Lincoln. The records say an August 7th hearing has been scheduled on Johnson's motion to receive pretrial diversion. Johnson was ticketed last month after a resident director reported suspected drug use in a dormitory room. The four-star recruit from Calabasas, California, had enrolled early and went through spring practice. He since left school at the behest of his father, former NFL receiver Keyshawn Johnson. He said he wants his 19-year-old son to mature before a hoped-for return to Nebraska in January. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Wednesday, July 12, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
Did you know that in the U.S., black women have the highest HIV infection rates of all women? As a public health professional, I know we can do better. Every day, I work to close the gap in health inequities, but I'm just one person. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We need to say, as Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Don't do it. There's no excuse for this.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Freedom Leaf Preview with Steve Bloom from Freedom Leaf Magazine. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Today in this special extended Radical Rant, we take on Attorney General Slingblade Hobbit, Jeff Sessions, and he delivered some remarks at the 30th DARE Training Conference. DARE, of course, the Drug Abuse Resistance Education that we all remember from the 80s, the Just Say No, when the cops come into the schoolroom and show kids what drugs are. Hey, kids, look at all these drugs. Aren't these interesting? Yes, and of course, we've had numerous studies that have shown that the DARE program was a wasteful failure, that in many cases, it actually enticed kids to be more likely to try drugs because they realize, oh, look, there's all these choices. Look at all these things I didn't know about. But what was interesting to me in preparing for this rant is I first got Jeff Sessions' prepared remarks online, and I'll post these in the chat room as well for anybody that would want to follow along during the rant. But his prepared remarks didn't exactly match what he said. And it's quite interesting as you listen to these clips, and I'm going to run these clips from top to bottom. So they start at the very front of his speech and run all the way to the end of his speech. I didn't switch the timeline up any. These are pretty much in order, the significant points that he made throughout his speech. And it's funny because as you listen to it, you can tell the parts where he's reading the prepared remarks, and then you can tell the parts where he's just riffing from the heart. Okay, so when he's reading the prepared remarks, it's often he'll be talking and then he'll have to stop and, oh, wait, I read that wrong, and I'll look back and I'll rephrase. There's a lot of halting. He's not a really good reader, okay? But you can tell when he starts speaking from the heart, his tone rises a bit. He starts to get a little more friendly and a little more aw shucks, southerner folksy guy. So in this first statement that I'm going to play for you, this is from his remarks, and he's talking about, he opens it up with the opioid crisis, right? And how, you know, we had 52,000 people die from drug overdoses in 2015. It's going to be up to 60,000 in 2016. And he wants to make this point about the overdose crisis being driven by opioids, prescription drugs, heroin, synthetic drugs like fentanyl. So he has this line in the prepared remarks where he's supposed to be talking about that, but he could not help himself but to ad lib and drop in a little dig at marijuana.
More powerful, more addictive, and more dangerous than ever. Even marijuana THC content is up several times. And they're not just dangerous for users. Even being accidentally exposed to just a few grams of fentanyl can kill a police officer or paramedic, as I know most of you well understand.
So he's trying to say, you know, he's trying to lump in the increase in marijuana potency with these other drugs that he's talking about. So the context is already, oh my God, fentanyl's 30 to 50 times more powerful than heroin. And marijuana potency went up a lot too, right? It's this conflating of marijuana potency with the overdose crisis. No one's dying of a marijuana overdose, Mr. Sessions. No one's ever died of a marijuana overdose. But to Jeff Sessions, though, this is really about a cultural crusade. As far as he's concerned, the golden era in law enforcement, in drug prevention, in drug policy was the 1980s.
In the 1980s, we confronted, when I was United States Attorney, skyrocketing drug abuse rates across the country. But the nation rose to the occasion. And we successfully reversed those trends, and it can be done again.
Okay, so let's take a look at the 1980s drug trends. Indeed, when you look at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, which before was the National Household Drug Abuse Survey, probably getting that not exactly right, Household Survey on Drug Abuse, I think is what it was called. You look back on those figures, and indeed, you do see a peak of illicit drug use around 1979 and 1980 that drops all the way through 1992. But what was leading to the peak of this so-called illicit drug use was marijuana, was so many people that were using marijuana in the late 70s. It wasn't so much a problem with all the other harder drugs. And there's also a question as to whether or not that decline is an actual decline or the fear of people to answer honestly, given the rhetoric and the fear being generated by the administration. Who wants to answer a question from an anonymous pollster in the middle of 1986, 1987, when every other commercial on TV is just say no and drug abuse is public enemy number one? Who wants to admit that they're the bad guy? So did drug use really drop, or did we see the reporting, the self-reporting of drug use drop throughout the 1980s and 1990s? And it's also always a mistake here to talk about how many people are using drugs.
1980, half high school seniors admitted they had used an illegal drug sometimes that year. But through enforcing our laws, good law enforcement, and by developing effective prevention programs, we were steadily able to bring that use, that rate down.
Yes, indeed. When I was going to high school, 1985, about half, a little more than half, about 60% of the people or 40% of the kids had mentioned that they had tried marijuana. And going back to 1979, that rate was as high as 60% of the kids had tried marijuana. That rate of trying marijuana has declined. There is nothing that's false about that. However, guess what else declined? Alcohol and tobacco. When I was a high school senior, 90% of my senior classmates had tried alcohol, and 70% of my high school classmates had tried cigarettes. Now, it's down to about 60-70% for the alcohol, and below 40%. It's actually below the level for cigarette for marijuana when you ask about cigarettes. So what was it that we did that got kids to use less alcohol and tobacco? Without arresting people, without stigmatizing people, without ruining their lives over the use of those two substances.
That's why I'm so pained. It hurts me so badly to see the trends we're on today. They've got to be reversed.
It hurts him so badly. He's so pained. But, of course, the trends that we're seeing today had a lot to do with the prohibition that we have. The prohibition is what leads to these trends that we see today.
In 1983, when DARE was founded in Los Angeles, DARE became fundamental to our success by educating children to the dangers of drug use.
As I said in the beginning, numerous studies that have taken a look at this, that have taken a look at DARE, have come to the conclusion that it had no success whatsoever in dealing in stopping kids from using drugs. There was no significant difference aside from some of the groups of kids actually becoming more likely to try drugs because their curiosity was piqued by looking at that briefcase that the cop brought in with all of the drugs. And so Dominic Holden, a great guy up in the Pacific Northwest, used to write for The Stranger, actually tried to reach out to get some evidence of this. Wanted to find out, how do you cite this, right? So he sent a message to the staff for Attorney General Sessions and asked, does DOJ have any evidence showing a causal relationship between the Obama administration's mandatory minimum sentencing policy and an uptick in the violent crime rate? Sessions said that the result... In addition, he said, what evidence does Sessions cite when he said DARE worked? There has been considerable evidence showing it was ineffective at reducing substance abuse. And why should we believe Sessions? And the response from the Department of Justice was, declined comment. Thanks. We don't have to prove nothing. We just say it. Declined comment. Thanks. That's it. That's all we got out of that. Ha! All right, so Sessions went on.
So now some people today say that the solution to the problem of drug abuse is to be more accepting of the problem. You know, just kind of live with it. Don't talk about it. Don't do anything.
Who is out there saying that? Who is this straw man out there that's saying we ought to just ignore the problems of drug abuse and just live with it and just let people be? That's all we're talking about these days is how do we deal with this crisis? That's been on the lips of everybody in drug reform.
They say marijuana use can prevent addiction. You've heard them say that. Unbelievable.
Well, it's not unbelievable. It's science. We've seen the reports that it reduces in Medicare Part D. It reduces the number of opiate prescriptions, the number of pills issued by doctor on an average of 1,800 pills per year per doctor. We've seen that it shows a reduction of about 25% in opiate-related overdoses and opiate-related deaths. This is not conjecture. This is not somebody just making something up and pulling it out of the department of their ass. This is real. People's lives are being saved because they have access to cannabis and are getting off of the opioids. And Jeff Sessions, by not allowing people to get to the marijuana, by continuing to prosecute and obstruct marijuana and its development as a legitimate medicine, is guaranteeing that there will be more people turning to the opioids and more people dying from these overdoses.
They say the answer is always treatment. Only treatment do they suggest. They say don't talk about enforcement. Gosh, we can't have prosecutions.
You can always tell what he's, like I said, when he said gosh, right? He's ad-libbing at that point. But yes, treatment is the answer. Treatment is the answer. What other problem, what other social problem do we have? What other sort of disease do we have, health condition do we have, where we prosecute people to stop them from being sick? Drug addiction problems, dependence issues are a health problem, and treatment is what we use to deal with that. But as far as Jeff Sessions is concerned, the idea is to pretend we could have a world where nobody ever starts taking drugs ever.
They say, don't say no to me. Don't tell me what I can't do. So that's the kind of mentality. But I'm going to tell you, that was a mentality in the late 1970s and early 1980s, too.
See, and there we get to the root of it. This is a culture war issue to Jeff Sessions. This is about those darn hippies in the 60s and the 70s, those libertine, liberal, anti-war leftists that said, tune in, turn on, and drop out, who said, it's all about me, the love decade. That's what he's got a problem with. He's still fighting the culture wars of the 60s and the 70s.
In fact, I would argue that one reason we're in such a crisis today, right now, is that we have subscribed to this mistaken idea that drug abuse is not a threat to us. And it's not just a choice, it's a destructive behavior.
So it's not just a choice, it's a destructive behavior if you consume drugs. I guess Budweiser doesn't count, though, right? Budweiser, Seagram's, Jack Daniels, those don't count because apparently, the Department of Justice has no interest in lobbying for alcohol to be added to Schedule 1, where it would belong if it was scheduled. but or maybe Schedule 2. There might be some medical uses you could argue for. But as sessions went on, it just got more and more offensive, and it led to this statement that he made that I had to bite my tongue not to shout at him while I was listening to it.
We are going to work hard together in partnership to crack down on drug distributors, drug dealers who are out there pushing drugs and destroying lives. But jail is not our goal. That's not what we want. What we want to see is drug use go down. We want to see fewer lives destroyed. We want to see more children graduate from college, not drop out of college. We want to see families. We want to see families strengthened, not broken apart and destroyed, and children traumatized by a parent who's addicted.
Yeah, we're going to work. We want to see more kids graduate from college. Yeah, tell that to any kid who ever lost his scholarship because of a marijuana piss test. We want to see families strengthened and not broken apart. Yeah, tell that to any kid who's ever had his parent incarcerated because they were growing a few houseplants to treat their glaucoma or their chronic pain. We want to see families not destroyed. Tell that to the parent who's had their father killed in a drug war DEA raid. We don't want to see children traumatized. Tell that to every kid who's ever had to see his family pet shot in front of his eyes by cops in the middle of a drug raid. I dare you.
We at the Department of Justice are going to work harder than ever to keep drugs out of our country, to reduce their availability, to reduce their price, and to reduce, increase their price, and to reduce the purity and addictiveness of the drugs that are on our streets.
Oh, really? Oh, really? So we're going to go back to what you did in the 1980s when you were a federal prosecutor from 1981 to 1993. The way we did things in the 1980s, that's your goal, that's your plan, that's your strategy. You want to reduce availability, drive up price, and reduce purity. Really, that's your goal. All right, well, let's take a look at the record. We actually have data on this. You can look this shit up. Office of National Drug Control Policy, average purity of street-level heroin purchases from 1981 to 2012. We see that under the tenure of Jeff Sessions, that average purity doubled, more than doubled. The prohibitionist policies, the get tough law enforcement, just say no, tough on crime policies in the 1980s led to a doubling of the purity of heroin. Oh, and you're going to drive up its price, right? You know, if we go after the kingpins, we go after the drug dealers, ooh, the price will get so high that nobody can afford it. Well, no. What happens when addicted people can't afford things is they commit crimes so they can afford things. Driving up the price doesn't stop addiction. It just makes the effects of it worse for everyone else. But again, let's go back to the stats. Let's go back to the history. Jeff Sessions, 1981 to 1993. I have this annual price of one expected pure gram of heroin. Again, this coming from federal figures. And that price of a pure gram of heroin was between $1,500 and $2,000 in 1981. By the time Jeff Sessions was out after his prohibitionist drug war get tough on crime, just say no policies, that price was down to between $500 and $750. So again, the price decreased by half. He wants to drive up the price. His policies drove down the price by half. He wants to reduce the purity. His policies increased the purity by half. So once again, the facts, the science, do not agree with the drug warriors.
Law enforcement is a part of the answer. It's part of creating a climate of hostility to drug use in America. It's part of creating a circumstance in which young people see that their culture, their very communities themselves, are united in opposition to this. And it also hammers these arrogant drug dealers and people who are making a fortune off misery of people. It creates a certain justice system, too, for that.
Oh, really? These people that are making a ton of profits off the misery of others, would that be Anheuser-Busch, InBev, S.A.B. Miller, Molson Coors, Altria, Philip Morris? I know. Pfizer, Purdue Pharmaceuticals, Insys Therapeutics. No. We're not talking about those guys that are profiting off the pushing of drugs and profiting from the misery of others. No, not those guys. Of course not. Now, speaking of those guys, this is where the gap in Jeff Sessions' understanding of reality couldn't be more pronounced. And that is in the following statement. Now, I gotta preface this statement by noting that the recording of the statement cuts off very interestingly and coincidentally right at the part of the statement that would make him look like an idiot.
So we know also that drug trafficking is an inherently violent business. If you want to collect a drug debt,
you can't and don't file a lawsuit in court. You collect it by the barrel of a gun. There is no doubt that violence tends to rise with increased drug dealing. Fascinating how that part got cut off. The whole quote is, we know drug trafficking is an inherently violent business. If you want to collect a drug debt, you can't and don't file a lawsuit in court. You collect it by the barrel of the gun. There is no doubt that violence tends to rise with increased drug dealing. That's the whole quote. It reminds you of the great Dos Equis Corona Wars of 2014. Remember when Dos Equis and Corona in Mexico were shooting it out for control over the distribution and trafficking and sales of beer? Remember that? Remember the 10, 20, 30,000 deaths because Dos Equis and Corona were shooting it out? Oh, yeah. You don't remember that because that doesn't happen. Because those drug dealers can file a lawsuit in court. Those drug dealers don't have to collect their drug debts at the barrel of a gun. And neither does Philip Morris, and neither does Purdue Pharmaceuticals, and neither does Insys Pharmaceuticals, or any of the rest of the legal drug dealers. How hard is this to understand? How can anyone with an understanding of American history and recognition of the 18th and 21st Amendments to the Constitution in the period between 1920 and 1933 not get it through their thick Keebler elf skull that prohibition of drugs is not going to work? That legalization and regulation of drugs, even though drugs themselves can cause societal harm, that the legalization and regulation of that harm is going to reduce that harm. Prohibition can only increase that harm. But again, logic is not Jeff Sessions' strong suit, as evidenced by his inability to understand that correlation does not equal causation, as he makes this post hoc ergo propter hoc comparison.
Sentences went down, but crime has gone up. Sentences for federal drug crimes dropped by 18%. From 2009 to 2016, violent crime, which had been decreasing basically for 30 years, suddenly started up again.
Yeah, it was all of a sudden, right? Because we made this policy change that didn't take effect for most of the people that he would be talking about until a couple of years after those stats already went up, right? So the timeline doesn't even work. Even if you accepted that premise, the timeline doesn't work. And when we're talking about violent crimes, it's not just violent crime doesn't just count, you know, the people that are in gun battles over drug turf. Violent crime includes arson. Violent crime includes rape, right? So what? Are we positing that rapes went up because drugs are legal? Are we positing that arson went up because drugs are legal, because drug dealers are burning stuff down? No. Violent crime goes up and down due to a lot of factors. And when we're talking about the people involved in the drug trade, that's not the primary driver of this violent crime.
Minority communities are disproportionately impacted by violent drug trafficking and addiction. Poor neighborhoods are too often ignored in these conversations. Regardless of their level of wealth or race, every American has the right to live in a safe neighborhood.
Boy, doesn't it just set your hair standing up on the back of your neck when you're hearing Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions from Alabama, worried about the plight of the minorities? Yeah, sure you are. Maybe you can explain then why under the current policies, those people in those minorities are much more likely to be arrested for the same crimes white people are committing and sometimes committing at greater rates. But those black and brown people are the ones that are filling the prisons. Those black and brown ones are the ones that are getting the stop and frisk. Those black and brown ones are the ones being shot while they're unarmed by police officers over small amounts of weed. Maybe you can explain that to a few minority moms who've lost their sons, who've maybe had to go to a couple of funerals now and then. Maybe you can explain that.
Under President Trump's strong leadership, this country is finally getting serious about securing the southern border, about most of the heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine and fentanyl in this country got here across the border by powerful cartels across the Mexican border.
So ask yourself, how did these cartels get to be so powerful? What is it that gives them their power? I know, it's ceding to them the market for illegal drugs. It's turning to those guys and say, hey, here's some really dangerous products. They're really popular, but these products are really dangerous, and we'd like you to have them, handle them. Would you distribute them, and would you profit from them and put them all around the world? Would you, please? See, Sessions and these guys actually think you could work toward 0% of people ever using drugs. They actually think that's a possibility. And if they don't think that's a possibility, they think that, well, we can reduce it, and it'll just keep getting reduced till it's some minuscule number. They fail to understand that drug use is a part of the human condition. It always has been. It always will be. Some people like taking drugs, and most of them don't have a problem with it. Most of them don't get wrapped up in the system. Most of them have jobs, have families, lead regular lives. It's just what they like to do for kicks instead of skydiving or skiing or surfing or whatever else. But they can't understand that because, again, this isn't about the harm. This isn't about the crime. This isn't about the economics, the productivity, the kids, any of the bullshit that they tell you. This is a culture war. This is a culture war. And that's why they have a blind spot when it comes to tobacco and alcohol, and they couldn't give a fig about that.
According to the National Institute of Drug Abuse, Mexican heroin production alone increased sixfold in 4 years, from 2005 to 2009. There were 50 metric tons sent into the United States. That number is now 70 million tons.
Oh my God! Oh my God! We went from 50 tons to 70 million! Obviously, he messed up there. It was from 50 metric tons to 70 metric tons. But I just wanted to include that clip to give you an idea of what he's like when he's trying to read from the script. He's not so bright trying to read from the script there. He totally messed up the stat trying to talk about it. But a comment on this is about why we're seeing this increase. Let me follow this up with another one of his quotes.
According to the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Mexican opium poppy, the heroin source, plantings increased by 64% from just 2014 to 2015.
Okay, so these are true facts that the Mexicans are planting more poppies. And the only part missing from this is an explanation of why. Why are they planting the poppies? Because, you know, there's not a whole lot of consumers of heroin, right? The number of people in any given month that are using heroin is 500,000 or less. So not a big audience to sell that to. Not a lot of customers. Marijuana, though. Oh, my goodness. Marijuana. 30 million people use marijuana regularly. So why would these guys be planting all these poppies when if they planted cannabis and harvested the marijuana from it, there'd be so many more people to sell it to? Oh, yeah. That's because we've legalized marijuana in 8 states now. And report after report since 2012 has talked about how the Mexican farmers who grow for the cartels can't make enough money planting cannabis anymore to sustain themselves. Their take has gone from $100 a kilogram down to $25 a kilogram, as reported by the Washington Post. A lot of these farmers are switching over to poppy because they have to.
because we took the marijuana business from them. Let's take the heroin business from them, too. Let's take that away. Again, I know this is hard for some people to understand, to wrap their minds around, but you just have to accept there will always be demand for heroin, there will always be demand for cocaine, there will always be demand for all of these drugs, and either we can regulate it and sell them and have some hand in controlling them, or we can abdicate that responsibility and give it up to murderous cartels. Why does Jeff Sessions want to keep giving business to murderous cartels? Ah, well, the last quote that I have for you may offer some insight into that, because he just briefly in this whole speech about the opioid crisis, touches on the root of this crisis, which was doctors being bribed to overprescribe all sorts of synthetic opioids. The DEA allowing a 39 times increase. He talked about a six-fold increase in heroin. There was a 39-fold increase in the production of oxycodone from 1993 to 2015. It was the doctors overprescribing, prescribing this stuff off-label, the FDA allowing these pharmaceutical companies to push their drugs direct to the consumer on the TV, to allowing them to give like beach balls and sun hats and all sorts of swag to promote this, setting up fake speaker programs for doctors and nurse practitioners and others to funnel money to them if they would prescribe more of these opioids. And then when those people do get addicted to those opioids, those synthetic, expensive opioids, and the doctor cuts them off or their insurance runs out, that's when they're going to the street and getting the heroin. That's when they're going to the street and getting the stuff that's laced with fentanyl. And that's when they're getting killed. That's when they're dying. But Jeff Sessions only had this little tiny thing to say about how the DOJ was going to go after Big Pharma.
The department is also holding drug manufacturers accountable for their actions. I am announcing today that the department has reached a $35 million settlement with Mallinckrodt Pharmaceuticals for failing to notify the DEA of suspicious drug orders in large numbers. These failures resulted in millions of Oxycontin pills being sold on our streets.
Ooh, did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? A $35 million fine! Whoa, they're really cracking down on Mallinckrodt, considering that Mallinckrodt in 2015 made $3.347 billion. 1 year, $3.347 billion. The fine that DOJ just announced that they settled with this company, not having to have them admit guilt, settled with them, represents about 1%. 1% of their sales from 1 year. And keep in mind, this fine is covering a span of years, a span where they were setting up all sorts of fake stuff to get people to get hooked on these opioids. Ooh, a $35 million fine. Jeff Sessions, you're such a big tough guy. It's all about protecting the corporate drug pushers, folks. This is not a war on drugs. This is a war between drugs, and the well-connected businesses with political clout keeping their natural competition out of business.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
As a formerly incarcerated person, I know firsthand all the ways that we are disenfranchised when we are run through the system. Every day I work to help people regain their rights and dignity, but the fight is far from over. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
The marijuana agenda, like the alcohol agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Welcome to the Southwest Cannabis Chronicle. Today, we catch you up on the latest news and speak with an expert from the sunny southwestern region of America. From the Lone Star State all the way to the islands of Hawaii, including the evolution of consumer cannabis in Las Vegas and the rest of Nevada. Grab your sunscreen and drink plenty of fluids. It's time for the Southwest Cannabis Chronicle.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Southwest Cannabis Chronicle. I'm Russ Belville, and of course, the biggest news in the Southwest when it comes to the reform of marijuana laws is the recent adoption of marijuana legalization in the Silver State. In Nevada, they began their recreational marijuana sales on July 1st, and it wasn't a week into sales. They found they were running out of product. And joining us to discuss the situation, we've got Braden Sutton. He's the CEO of Friday Night Inc., which owns and controls both hemp and cannabis-based operations in Nevada. And Braden, welcome to the show.
Hey, Russ. Thank you so much for having me.
So did this really catch everyone in Nevada by surprise that people like marijuana and would buy it legally if they had the chance? I mean, who's doing the surveys and the studies there, huh?
Big shocker. Hey? No, I think everybody knew it would be big. It would be positive. But it far exceeded, I think, anybody's expectations. And with the you know, as most people know, there's about 45 million visitors a year. And the per capita usage is always what's important to look at is, you know, what percent of the population might be looking to make a purchase. And clearly, even that first night of the first, you know, they had lineups of, in some cases, in excess of 100 people just lining up for the, you know, if not the novelty, being now the fifth state, of course, and then the residents themselves who have been long awaiting. So, yeah, very, very exciting, and it definitely blew away all our expectations from all around, yes.
So the beginning was 44 licensed outlets in Nevada, and 39 of those being in the city of Las Vegas by itself. And if I understand this correctly, it was a situation where they're just allowing the existing medical marijuana dispensaries to sell to recreational customers. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the medical cultivators currently, there's 77 in Clark County. They've got the 18-month advantage of a moratorium on any outside applications. So in other words, only the current medical providers could apply, and it did cost, I think it was around $70,000 U.S. just for the application. To provide these dispensaries with 21 up cannabis.
All right. And so we've got these 44 outlets, 39 in Las Vegas, Clark County, which of course where most of the tourists would be going to make their recreational pot purchases. So what we had then was a medical system. Now, Nevada in 2013 allowed people with out-of-state medical cards to shop there at the dispensaries. Do I have that right?
That's correct. They were the first state. There's actually now 29 states. Most people don't even know there's that many, but 29 with a medical program. Nevada was the very first to do reciprocity, even with Canada, actually, is what in Europe, if people had a card from another jurisdiction. But they did accept, you know, all the retail stores had giant signs saying California cards welcome, and really embraced it because the medical side is, you know, it's snoozy. It's not a, they did allow the reciprocity. And as I said, it's medical is in general pretty snoozy. You know, there's not that many folks that'll go out and either purchase or see a doctor and get a card. And therefore, it's just night and day, you know, in relation to just being able to deal with the public, anybody 21 and up walking in.
Right. So we had at least some ramp up, though, at these Nevada dispensaries from serving just Nevada clientele to being able to serve clientele who have cards from any state. And of course, a lot of visitors with from next door California, where, as you say, getting a card isn't so difficult necessarily. But even with this little bit of ramp up, bam, you got blindsided by the recreational demand. And the latest we've heard on this is the governor there having to step in. What's going on with the governor and this whole situation of trying to restock these dispensaries that have run out of weed?
Yeah, Sandoval. So the real issue that, you know, I don't think, frankly, many people anticipated it being to this extreme, as I said, but, you know, by August, there's a very high likelihood that there will be literally no cannabis available. And because, of course, it's not federally legal, there's no way to import into the state. So, you know, it's really, everybody's kind of looking around right now going, okay, well, you know, there's really going to be a drought, you know, with pretty much without a doubt here over the next couple of months, for sure.
But you've got the existing growers, you've got people applying to be growers, you've got these shops, and more of them will open up. The interesting bottleneck in this situation has to do with the actual distribution of the product. Even if you guys had a whole bunch of cannabis to supply these shops with, isn't there a problem in the distribution part?
Yeah, exactly. So there's five alcohol distributors who at the last minute, they ended up winning a case. They fought back and wanted to be have the exclusivity on all distribution. They won it, which in my opinion is a great thing in a sense that, you know, they're in that business. They've got the ecosystem and all of the moving parts to make it happen. The downside being they obviously don't know cannabis. They haven't transported cannabis. They don't understand its logistics. And so the cultivators are themselves handcuffed in the sense that, well, they can no longer just physically drive the product to the store. They now have to deal with this middleman. So there could very much be, you know, hiccups over again the next, you know, call it 6 to 8 weeks as it unravels. But they successfully won. So it'll be basically to be determined how it's going to unfold. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting case where the question two in Nevada that was the initiative to legalize gave the exclusive distribution rights to the alcohol distributors, but had a caveat in there that said if they couldn't handle the load, there could be more distributors added. Well, clearly it seems that these five guys can't handle the load. How difficult a case do you think?
Yeah, and I mean, you can kind of myself read between the lines and go, okay, well, that line was there very purposefully because there's a high likelihood of this happening and breaking down, and then they're going to go, okay, well, we're obviously going to need some help from the industry here. So I'm, you know, like I said, I myself am not concerned. We've got tremendous guys there, both legal and operational in Las Vegas, and you know they're not sweating anything yet. So they're just kind of again sitting back and waiting to see everything unfold.
All right. So as a CEO of this company, Friday Night Inc., you're controlling cannabis operations in Nevada. How does this affect you, and how do you plan for the future? What sort of things are you going to have to do to ride this wave?
Yeah, good question. So one thing that we've got an asset down there, 91% of is infused manufacturing, which you can look up. But it's cannahemp.com. But it is a husband and wife startup, just literally only 6 months old, that's blown away all of their financial projections and everyone's expectations. We put them in a state-of-the-art 5,000 square foot facility just a couple miles from our cultivation facility. And keep in mind, that's 100% hemp-derived CBD and, of course, 50-state friendly. So it's really taken off, and it's, I've always referred to it almost like a hedge in a sense that CBD is so much more broadly desired. And then, of course, you've got the possibility, the potential for some of these products to end up in any sort of major retailer that would be across the country. So that's a really exciting side of the business that we're obviously putting a lot of focus and attention into, in addition to really, really stepping up our footprint right there in Las Vegas. So outside of the state, which we've got multiple initiatives we're looking at outside of Nevada, but our core focus being there, the main thing right now is land grab. So in an urban setting like Las Vegas, you've got things that you don't normally think about when it comes to real estate purchase, like power, water, two major, major issues. When it comes to big cultivation facilities, let alone your neighbors, the odor, things like, you know, what is the actual status of the property? Is it an ALR? Is it commercial, et cetera, et cetera? So we've got one in our sights. We're working with a large Canadian bank right now to make that happen. So should it work out for us, then I think it would give us a really nice kind of, call it a year lead, just to be able to meet this much more than anticipated demand.
I got to bring you back to a statement you made halfway through there about you developing hemp-derived CBD products that you said are, quote, 50-state friendly. If they're so 50-state friendly, why did 16 states pass laws to legalize CBD oil, and why are there three bills in the federal Congress to legalize CBD?
Well, I think it's about time that people realize the benefits of it. I mean, it's been broadly known now scientifically for 20, 30-plus years. It's been used for literally thousands of years, but it's just that the product, what I mean, is it has no MME restrictions. It can be shipped anywhere. It can be sold, you know, again, through an e-commerce site and get into places like Costco and CVS and Walgreens. And it's not a marijuana product. It's hemp-derived. So, again, that's hopefully I'm answering your question there. I'm not sure what.
So your product contains cannabidiol?
Yes, it does. Yeah, and there's several products. So you, and like I said, if you want to see sort of the types, it's just cannahemp.com, but everything from the actual vapes themselves to, of course, all your topicals and creams and lip balm and pretty much everything you can.
So when the Drug Enforcement Administration repeatedly puts out bulletins, as they did last week, reiterating that cannabidiol is a Schedule I controlled substance, you just violate that law and tell your customers it's okay to violate it?
No, there's still so many that, you know, I guess that's a extremely good question, but there's so many companies that continue to sell these products that I don't, I think it's one of those situations, even like with the state where there was pushback on the federal legalization where they said the people have spoke. So we'll get to see what'll happen there, but they're doing quite well with that line of products. You know.
But to be clear, you're telling your customers the cannabidiol in your hemp-derived CBD oil is legal in all 50 states, while the DEA is saying it's not.
No, the verbiage that's on their site is that they'll ship to all 50, right?
So, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if in it, you know, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any, you know, there's several drink companies, for example, that are shipping all through California and Arizona and all through the states, and I'm not aware personally of any that have made any changes here. But no, that's a good.
So you were mentioning, was it Canna Hemp? What did you say the website was?
Their website is cannahemp.com.
Cannahemp.com. So nowhere on the cannahemp.com site will it be telling consumers that they're violating federal law by ordering this product.
Well, I would have to go on there, and that site in and of itself is actually brand new. So I've got Chris and Morgan, who are our operators down there. Like I said, they've only been in business for going on now 6 months. So I'd have to, get Chris on. Chris is very much, as it relates to legislation, I mean, he's quite plugged into it. So I'm certain that they're taking any measures they have to warn people if there is, you know, any sort of disclaimers on the site. I'm sure that they will be there 100%. Yeah.
Is there any other aspects of the legalization in Nevada that your company is having to deal with that we've heard about in other states, like the banking issues, the taxation issues, anything you want to mention there?
They still let you pay taxes with cash, which is ironic, but good to step. So the IRS there is a non-issue, but banking is very much a touchy subject. I mean, Colorado's had a couple of years to come to where they've come in terms of, you know, a credit union type model. And I think Nevada will get there, but yeah, it's still very much a challenge when dealing in a, you know, still such a, you know, growing business, but one that is literally forced still to work in cash and physical cash. It's something that needs to change immediately.
Well, it's an amazing market that's developing there in Nevada and throughout the rest of the states that have legalized recreational cannabis. We appreciate you, Brandon Sutton, the CEO of Friday Night Inc., for joining us here on the Southwest Cannabis Chronicle to discuss it a bit.
Thank you, sir. I do appreciate you having me.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
It's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
All right, folks. Well, I went long on the radical rant, so we're going to push the drug war data mining into hour two. I've also got some reefer madness to debunk. Coming from our side, CEO Joel Stanley from Charlotte's Web has authored a op-ed where he makes a lot of those CBD oil is legal claims, so I got to tear that down. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
It's like a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.